Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers, because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the September 14 edition of Commodity Week. Well, this week's crop production report caught the trade just a bit by surprise, and corn dropped in price by 17 cents. The soybeans essentially did nothing on the week, while most had expected them to rally. We'll ask our Commodity Week panel and guest today why and what a producer should do with the fall harvest.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois. On the phone line from his office in West Lafayette, Indiana, is Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find us online at willag.org, on your smartphone at m.willag.org, or for our daily programming, just dial this number, 217-333-3434. We update it with a bit of analysis and either the opening or closing market report numbers at about 10:15 and 3:15 Central Time each and every business day of the year. Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Kurt Kimmel, USDA, says the national corn yield is just 0.6 of a bushel off its August guess. How close do you suppose the agency is to the final yield, given adjustments yet to come in future reports?
Oh, they're probably within 2 to 4 bushels. But the thing on the yield is planted and even harvested acres. This yield's probably a moving target. There's going to have to be some adjustments to look at as we go down the road. I think probably what the main thing producers need to watch more than the yield is total production, 10.7. I think that's more of an indicator, and we feel that number is probably 2 million bushels too high, and we look for the total production number to be closer to 10.5.
Aaron, let's just adjust that question to include final production number as well.
Yeah, I think that's the bigger thing you watch here. Just like Kurt said, what they do with the harvested acre, especially as we get a little farther down the road here, we will have kind of the FSA acres numbers here in October, and then how they adjust those harvested acres moving forward is probably going to impact production a little more than the yield. But I'd agree with Kurt. I think they're, you know, fairly close. Probably as we get closer to the final end number there in January, I think firms like Informa still suggest that we're going to kind of grow this yield as we move forward. And we have, you know, as the harvest moves a little farther north in Illinois, we are starting to hear a few more stories of better than expected yield. So we could see some adjustment here moving forward. But I think that total production number is what you need to watch a little closer.
And Mike Zuzolo?
Yeah, the 10.5 number seems to ring a bell with a lot of people, Todd. I think, you know, you also have the quality issues still. Now there's mold that's being talked about in the corn crop. We've still got not a very good beat on the aflatoxin issue. So I guess it goes back to final production, probably around 10.5. I think that's a fair number, but what is the actual number when it comes to when you wrap up all the different issues with the quality and with the aflatoxin and the mold potential of it? I think this week's USDA report kind of solidified, in my mind anyway, that the USDA is going to be unlikely to take carryover below 625 million bushels before year end and be able to spark the market, you know, to justify a reason to get us back up to those old contract highs. That the government's unlikely to do that, in my view.
The September corn this week at a high of 777.5, settled off 17.5 cents. December, that was their settlement price, rather at 777.5. December, a 782 settlement price was down 17.5 cents as well. The March corn, just 4 cents under that. The May corn, a 2 cent carry. Actually, March and May both have a carry, 4 cents and 2 cents, respectively. So not much in the marketplace there. We heard Mike Kurt Kimmel suggest that the highs may not be reached again. Do you think that'll be the case?
Well, we'll have to see how the end user, whether he's comfortable or not. When Mike said, you know, that ending stocks is going to shrink probably a little bit more, but the ending stocks number indicates that the market's going to have to stay somewhat firm here to ration the supply we have. We kind of feel we're more in a trading range now. We feel we get down in the 750 to 730 D's corn, you're going to find good support. But you get back up in that 830, 840, 850, if that would happen, you're going to start to choke demand again.
Hey, Mike, I don't want to put words into your mouth. Do you really think that we won't make it back up to the December contract highs?
I think between now and the year end, it's unlikely. And what I was really trying to get at, and thanks for coming back, I really do feel like it's more the government report. I think a lot of people were looking for the government to support us and that the government would continue to say supply is falling faster than demand. And the government is without a doubt now saying, no, that's not the case. We'll go back and find old crop bushels before we'll tell you that supply is falling faster than demand and you need to ration. And I think Kurt hit it on the nose. What I've told clients and producers this week is I really don't believe that the futures market between now and the end of the year will go up by itself in corn. It'll need wheat or it'll need beans to lead it up. But the cash market, once we get past December and get into the wintertime and we start talking issues with producers not letting go of corn, because it's tightly sealed away in the bin, that's where I think that 849 comes back into play, Todd.
Aaron Curtis, when you look at the cash market, does it support, and basis that is, the idea that supply and demand are more balanced than what the trade had suspected?
Well, I think if you look at historic numbers, we're still trading above historic values, especially for the harvest time frame. We have seen decent March corn spread go back out to 4 cents here. So kind of telling us that, you know, the market is coming to some realization that we can't move all the corn in the fall. We need to entice some people to kind of hang on to some things as we move into at least through the harvest time frame, at least into as we move into the winter time frame. I agree with Mike. I think that we're going to continue to see some basis firmness here as we move through harvest. We're moving through harvest at a pretty fast pace. Storage isn't going to be an issue at this point. And I think if this market does want to back off a little bit, I think the farmer is going to seal up his interest in wanting to sell anything. We have seen some active farmers selling, at least in Illinois, across the scale. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes if this market does kind of level off here.
As much as total crop size matter, it's really the ending stocks that will make a difference by the time we get there for next fall. And USDA says that number now at 733 million. It's very tight, but not as tight as it was in August, Kurt Kimmel, at 650 million.
Well, I still think we're talking pipeline supply. What is true pipeline supply? But two, you run into the factor like we did this last year. If we get in early, have early crop, you're going to rob new crop to satisfy old crop demand. And then two, we're still looking at, you know, some the figures on the feed use and exports and some substitution there. I feel they're going to keep it as tight as they can. It's not going to go to zero, but it's going to be close where they feel pipeline's going to be at.
So let's poll all of you, and we'll start with Mike Zuzulo. Are you a willing seller of new crop corn, or are you dividing it between good and not so great corn?
Yeah, I think you have to. If you're doing the thing for your clients you need to be doing, Todd, I think you got to ask them if the quality's there, because you don't want to. From all the meetings I went to a month ago, you don't want to put aflatoxin corn in the bin. You're just going to come out a loser. Even if the price goes up a dollar, you're probably going to get hit a dollar just because you stored it. So I think that if you have good quality corn, start binning it at this point because the futures and the basis both have fallen, at least in our listening area, and then protect the downside on the paper side. I'm much more nervous about the investment funds and the fund flows moving out of the commodities and stocks in the fourth quarter. So I'm not bullish the futures price, but I think the cash market has another day after the first of the year to be able to come back around.
Some of these advisors have sold 200% of the crop or sold it 5 or 6 times. You know, a lot of people are 50% sold. They're 100% sold due to the smaller yield. So, but, you know, I think if you do have inventory, if you're a cash guy, you could probably store it for a little while. But I think the grain traders wants the grain now, not later. So I think, like Mike, you go ahead and move it. And if you want to have ownership, I would replace it on paper.
And Aaron?
Yeah, I agree with Kurt. I think up at these levels, you need to be continuing to reward the market, especially when it comes to decision whether or not I put corn in the bin or whether or not I haul it to town. I think that stuff needs to go to town as quality is going to be an issue here as we move throughout the harvest time frame. And I also agree with Kurt, if you feel like you need to be long corn at near $8, I think you do it on paper, increase your flexibility.
Hey, Mike, I want to ask you, before we get to soybeans, a couple of big macro questions. QE3, the Federal Reserve decided it would get into politics, I guess, this week more than anything else, saying that our unemployment rate was just too high and it's planning to do something about it. So it's indefinitely going to infuse money into the marketplace in one way or another. What do you think of that?
Well, I think the reaction by the Federal Reserve shows the market that the August industrial production being the worst in 3 years for the month of August, the CPI in August being the biggest one-month increase since June of 2009. I think this economic data and the fact that our credit rating is getting talked about again by Moody's this past week, and the fact that we're back to $100 crude oil and new contract lows in the dollar, it makes sense why the Fed is doing what they're doing. They see a really rough spot for the United States and the global economy, and that's why they pump more money in, Todd. But the markets didn't react that way. The markets reacted that not only did Ben Bernanke feed the bull, he went out and delivered the hay. He put the hay to the cow, and then he gave it a bath, and then he polished its hooves. I mean, he really did a job for feeding the bull in the investment world, but in the real economy, it's just not there. And I think that's where the trade is probably extremely irrational right now, especially given that the S&P is at a five-year high. So it really makes me nervous, and especially given that the bond markets made major lows at the end of the week. The 10-year yield and the 30-year yield are now the highest since May. Bernanke does not want higher interest rates. He wants low interest rates, especially in the long end of the curve. So I get real nervous about the risky assets after this week.
Yeah, I think Mike's got a good observation there, but I can't wait till some of his QE money gets into my checking account.
Soy complex September beans this week, a high of 1760 and a quarter, low at 1688 and a half. A settlement price there on the week up 4 3/4 at 1736 and a half. The November beans at $17.39 were up 2.5 cents. Most people thought that the beans might rally a bit more than they really did after the USDA report. What happened, Kurt?
Well, we saw them reverse the trend there and saw some buyers come in, a lot of speculative buying. And like Mike hit on the news here, I think we saw a lot of commodity fund investment money come back into the marketplace. So it was a combination of the two. The disappointment was Friday. I think it's going to be important for these Novembers to try to stay above this 1752 area. If we can stay that, maybe we can recharge on higher here. The big key question is China. They've sort of slowed down their purchasing. If they're not interested in buying beans, it's going to be awful hard to get too bullish.
And China, the key, right, for you too, Aaron?
Yeah, I think that's right. If you look at the amount of beans we have on the books already, we're already around 72% of our goal here, providing China continues to hang in there and doesn't do anything with purchases if we do rally up here a little bit. So we've got a still a pretty healthy export program when you look at the adjusted number down even this week. NOPA crush out this morning, a little less than expected moving forward. So continue to watch those couple figures on the demand side. But really, you know, it didn't change ending stocks here for this next marketing year. So I think we kind of continue to stick in a little bit of a range here moving forward.
Bean harvest ready to ramp up. A few coming in, do you suspect, Aaron? And we'll pull everybody on this one. Should they sell those across the scale?
I still think you do. I think these prices are very good, very attractive to take across the scale. And I continue to reward these high prices moving ahead into harvest.
Your all-time highs, I think you reward the market in through here, and our number one strategy is move the cash and replace on paper, so you have flexibility, like Aaron said earlier.
And Mike?
I want to give it 10 more days, Todd. I think that the El Nino hasn't come in, and I think the USDA report, by cutting the old crop carryover and cutting the yield, I think the USDA allowed the potential for a renewed weather bowl to step into this market probably earlier than normal. But the contacts that I've got and talked to in South America this week would suggest that if you're not planting in good weather by the time we get to mid to late October, then you're probably going to start hampering the yield potential, and we're going to have to start walking back this huge crop. So if we can't get an El Nino developed here going into the end of September, I think that's worthy of holding back on letting any beans go at this point.
And the livestock for the week, 7402.5, and the lean hogs, they were up 267.5, and the October live cattle at 127 and a nickel, 57.5 cents higher. October feeder cattle at 146.62.5. We're up 47.5 cents. They had an outside up week. 10 seconds. Why?
Saw some renewed speculative interest come in, but the main thing is on the feeders is guys out west are just having an awful hard time capturing the feeders. A lot of them's been placed, and the drummers just aren't there.
We'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It was a cool week across Illinois with temperatures 2 degrees below normal. Much of the northern half of the state saw less than an inch of rain. However, much of the southern half of Illinois reported rainfall in the range of 1 to 3 inches. The heaviest rains were in a band about 100 miles wide along Interstate 70. The U.S. Drought Monitor reflects the beneficial rains of the last 4 weeks and the remarkable recovery of soil moisture. While the northwest corner of the state remains in D3 exceptional drought, much of the rest of the state is in either D1 or D2, the two lowest categories of drought. A month ago, most of the state was in the two worst categories of drought. The forecast for the weekend is for fall-like weather with clear skies, mild temperatures, low humidity, and no rain. Highs will be in the upper 70s on Saturday across Illinois and lows near 50 Saturday night. On Sunday, highs will be in the upper 70s and lows in the mid-50s. There is a chance of rain on Monday and Monday night as another cold front pushes through the state. Amounts are expected to be less than 1/2 inch in most cases. Tuesday will be colder with highs in the 60s and lows Tuesday night in the low to mid-40s. Wednesday and Thursday will be a little warmer with highs back in the low 70s and lows in the 50s. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the September 14 edition of Commodity Week. It comes from you from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. Our panelists in studio include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's actually in Lafayette, Indiana. Aaron Curtis here in studio with us from Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois. On the phone line is Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group in Chicago. Thanks for taking the time with us, Jerry. When you looked at USDA's report and then made some discussion about it, wrote that it was pretty likely that the October report would not change too much and that 850 would probably be a high for the marketplace for December corn.
Yeah, I think at least what we know for now, and I think we also have a good chance of posting maybe the pre-harvest low in corn. A lot of buying came in at that down 15 cents that day of the report, and at least it sets a benchmark for us to gauge it with, and And, of course, the closer we get to 850, then if we can get back up there, then that tells us that curb demand before. And I think until we know more about actual demand curbing or lack thereof, we're probably in that trading range again with corn.
All right. So you put a trading range of what on the marketplace, the low this week and the contract high?
Yeah, yeah. I think the low this week, and usually, you know, we mark a low in the if we mark a low with the September crop, and that was kind of a bearish report, and so closing higher like we did for the week off of that report, I think sets the stage for at least something to gauge with, and you know, I usually think to myself, I don't know how high it might go, but I know what it shouldn't do. It shouldn't take out last week's lows or this week's lows that we made on the 12th, and that kind of goes for corn, wheat, and beans. And I think especially some things a lot of people aren't yet talking about, and that's what Bernanke said about the what they're planning to do. And to me, that was a, kind of a watershed moment, even maybe for agriculture and livestock, and that they're going to continue to pump money at this thing, and the next focus is get people employed. And we're going to do that until it works. We're not going to stop if it doesn't work. We're going to do it until it does work, even if it inflates things a little, which, of course, they want. So I think that was good for agriculture. I was wondering myself, who's going to eat the livestock that's going to, if we get to hold $8 corn where it's at $8 or even higher, who's going to eat the stuff that it produces? And maybe that's part of our answer, is that we don't dare herd ethanol and the livestock industry and lay more people off. So maybe at least the Obama administration would leave it alone, perhaps, and they're likely a walk-in now. So that looks like that's safe to say that they're going to let the market do its thing and put more money to it, and put money in the hands so people can eat and drive cars. That's my bottom line. I'm pretty positive on the economy and have been for quite some time, at least for the last 18 months.
Well, Jerry, looking at all the numbers and deciphering what commodity of corn, beans, or wheat would be potentially more bullish than the other?
I think beans, hands down. There's some assumptions by the government. Of course, they lowered the yield, which surprised me. I thought maybe we'd raise it. And I may be a victim of my backyard, but northern Illinois got rains, and we're hearing it from people in Indiana and other places that, by golly, the beans really came back. So we have a chance of increasing the bean yield, but I don't think it's significant enough to offset really the world demand. And of course, here comes South America. If they don't get a good average yield, even with, say, 8% more acres, it appears that the world could consume everything that they grow. And we may not even be able to grow enough soybeans next year to relieve that tension, whereas in corn we possibly could. You know, if we get a good crop next year, 162 bushels, we could end up with a surplus if we hurt demand too much. So beans, I think, hands down. And I've talked to a lot of people, you know, globally that I have respect for, and there's a lot of talk that the end user of meal is just maybe like deer in the headlights. You know, the commercials may have bought some and specs have bought meal, but the end user is kind of got short bought, and there may be such a point in the U.S. where we may find an absence of the physical commodity, and I think there's the biggest concern is you can buy paper, but that doesn't guarantee that you're going to get the physical commodity, and I think it's that serious, and any disruption in South America weather-wise could be a big problem, and I think there's excitement yet to come, and I don't, you know, at a $2 drop in beans, I think you find a lot of demand, and maybe we do have to go to that $20 mark. I'm not predicting it, but I am long beans. I bought back some old crop beans in July. I like buying July beans because if there's a crop problem, and I'm selling $17 beans now and buying them back for $2 less, that's fine with me. I'll re-own them. I don't want to put them in an elevator. So that's kind of been my strategy to do that, and maybe even buy back some old crop sales that we did around that $13, $14 level that doesn't look good now. We bought them back and some of those back for the July. And then we'll see how it sets. But all the technicals and that situation and beans look good. And beans, bean oil, bean meal, and even canola is making new highs. And my son-in-law farms in Minot, North Dakota, and a daughter, and they had a good canola crop coming. But when they harvested, it, kind of like our beans. By golly, the heat hurt it, and they're thinking it was 20% at least less than they thought. And even the crop in Canada and Saskatchewan is coming in much less than they figured, anywhere from 20 to 40% less. And that's probably going to hit the market in the weeks ahead as they wind down their harvest.
Jerry, this is Aaron. Question on corn demand. Have we done enough rationing there? And more specifically, Is there much hope in the near term anyway for any sort of a pickup in the export program?
Well, I don't see it in exports. We saw a lot of wheat being bought from Russia and Ukraine, but I think the export market is would suffer the most. Ethanol is the one that looks pretty good, obviously, with crude oil at $100 again, and the stimulus program, we're probably going to burn more gas even at $4 or $4.50. So I think it's going to come on the shoulders of feed grain if it does, and of course, exports could fall some more, but there's a lot of salaries been cut. I think there's an assumption that maybe we're going to feed some of that to feeder cattle, but from the guys that I talked to, they're buying it to feed cows because we've got an acute shortage of hay. The dairy guy is in trouble. So I think we've started to curb demand at $8. I just don't know yet whether we've curbed it sufficiently. And if you recall 1995-96, you know, that $5 corn back then snuck up on us. But we had the same kind of quarterly stocks anticipation looking ahead. You know, we can all look at these numbers like USDA and say, what's got to be done? And that's all they're doing is suggesting you need to cut here and cut there. And our economic model suggests this. And then we measure that. Probably, you know, our next measurement is going to be January 12th or 11th, whenever that stocks report comes out. Then we'll get a good handle of just what we thought we should use and what we did use, and then extrapolate that through the rest of the year. And that may be the surprises that come forward, because some of that new crop corn was used in old crop year, which has still got people confused. I don't know why, but so we had carried in more corn, ending stocks, per se, and that should show then in turn more usage as the new stocks come forward, because we use some of new crop corn in old crop year. So we should, I think, you know, I'm not going to bet my farm on it necessarily, but my gut feeling is that if this turns out to be another year where it's a realizing market, to where if you think we're going to need $10 corn, it's going to be in July, August, and September, or June, July, and August, when we find out that we're using 100 million bushels more than we have at that rate, and we've got to cut consumption severely those 3 months, like we did in 95-96, or we run out of corn.
Jerry, on the interior corn basis weakening, how much of that do you think is aflatoxin-related selling, or is this just plain demand weakening, or maybe the yields popping up? Do you have any take on that at this point? I know it's early.
No, I don't. I know there's aflatoxin problems. There's some elevators aren't even checking, and some are, but it's kind of typical going into a harvest time. I for one, and I know some other people would say, you know, if it's $8 and I'm harvesting, they're going to get mine. And I kind of like that idea myself, regardless of one's idea, if you think they're going to 10 or whatever, or 9. $8 times 100 bushels an acre is still a pretty good year. And I think that's, you know, I've been telling our clients who've got a mediocre crop like myself, I'm hoping for 100 bushels. You know, 8 times 100, if you were flexible enough to use futures and not too much cash, you can just dump it. And it's really not worth the risk to, like I told one fellow, I said, you know, we're going to go through the year and come out of this and not smelling like a rose, but if we've got a crop to sell. And we're saying, gosh, I suffered in the United States the worst drought in almost our lifetime, and I'm going to make money. I don't know if you want to speculate a whole lot on the come and get this year behind us and start looking at next year, because this is a gift. If you got 200 bushel corn, which we're seeing, then my goodness, you know, how much do you want? $1,600 an acre? And so an insurance helped the other guy. So this is a godsend, I think, that we had any kind of crop at all and a high price at the same time.
Jerry, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we were wrapped up, I think, right, the crop insurance setting month for wheat, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And so given that, would you advise producers to who want to plant wheat to go ahead and do that, and are they going to double crop soybeans after them?
Yeah, we hear a lot of that. Guys, especially in the South where they can, Kentucky and Arkansas, where the heat got their crop, you know, and on corn. And they're looking at some of the best. They had good yields in double crop last year in beans, and some of them are telling us that our double crop beans are going to be as good as first full season beans were. So like over 40 bushels an acre. Goodness, you know, it's hard to compete with wheat and corn, wheat and double crop beans. Plus, we have clients southwest of Dixon and in that area that are planting wheat behind the corn that they cut for silage. And he's going to plant wheat, and he's buying cows that he's going to feed. And, you know, he's got some
maverick ideas and say, you know, I'm going to buy these cheap cows and feed them this chili that I got for nothing, basically. I just bought it pretty cheap. And he said, I'm going to plant wheat on it. And as I understand it, he says, from April, when the boot stage in wheat is in, if it's good wheat, he said, maybe I'll keep it. Otherwise, I'm going to cut it for silage and feed it. And he said, that will eliminate use of protein. And I'm not a livestock person per se, but he's telling me that wheat ground up with the silage will work as good as some meal with it. And he said, his comment was, you can have your doggone $600 meal, whatever it's going to be. He said, I don't want to be involved in it. So we're getting some of that as well. So that's kind of that. I think there's a lot of wheat. There was a lot of winter wheat last year in North Dakota, but corn turned out pretty good. And so I think there's some move there to probably not plant as much winter wheat and go with more corn next year. I cannot believe the corn crop they're getting up in northwest North Dakota had a perfect crop here, and it's my daughter on some of that $1,200 an acre land they bought is going to yield 20 bushels better than mine down here, you know, and you just multiply the numbers, and it was a great time for her to start farming.
Hey, Jerry, you mentioned that you did receive some rains this summer, but where are you at on your yield expectations, you think, then?
You know, and this is what scares me a little bit about these crops is that, I know I did a CNN or CNBC deal where we looked at a field, and I thought if that field made 50 bushel an acre, I'd be lucky. We got 1.8 inches of rain about a week later or 5 days later, and then some series of quarter inches and three-tenths and that kind of thing. And now I think that crop, it's amazing what it did. And I guess it's genetics. We're going to, you know, this final chapter in this drought hasn't been written yet, but it's amazing what it did. As long as it wasn't in that final, I was in kind of the late water stage, early melt stage when that rain came. Wasn't early corn, and it helped. I think I'm going to average, I'm hoping for 100, but I really think gut feeling I might make 120. And there was a long time that, you know, I wouldn't sell any cash corn because I didn't know if that 50 or 70. I'm up to 70 bushels an acre cash contracted now as of this week, and I'm hoping for 100, 120. And I'd be, everybody I've talked to that started, I'd say from I-80 north or maybe even below that a little bit, is saying, doggone, this, you know, we just finished 180 or 160, and it came in about 10 to 20 bushels better than we thought. So that bothers me a little bit as we go further north, that come October 12th, when we get a much better reading on our crop, we may, that may put the final nail in the coffin if we would actually increase carryover and increase yield along with it. It's a wild card, but all we've heard first is the bad stuff. And now we're hearing combine last night, and I went on the field, and I said, you got 160, 180 bushel corn. He said, nah. So he went to combine it, and it's running 165 across the scales, and he's got some that's running in 200 to 240. Nebraska, an old mentor friend, he calls them, and I didn't think they were going to get a crop. He says, this heat, we can't take it, and it's irrigated ground. They get the first field, but the first 170 bushels an acre. He says, I don't know where the corn came from, but he said, it's there. So you hear that, and then you hear the zeros in the 40s, and, you know, the government may not be too far off.
At current, or do you think it'll be closer to what Informa says at 126?
Well, I think what they're going to do is lower harvested acres to get to that 126. And that's the other thing we got to contend with. So a lot of people have kind of shrugged off is that they have alerted us to the fact that USDA, that their FSA numbers, preliminary, said 3 million more acres of planted crops. And that's more in line with what we thought early on, and that there would be more planted acres. And so there could be 1.5 million more beans. And then maybe 1 million more corn or 800,000 more corn. That gives them the luxury of then reducing the harvested acres and not changing things too much. To say, okay, you planted 800 more, but we cut for silage and we zeroed out and so forth. So we got rid of the crap, so now our yield can be 124 instead of 121 times less acres harvested. And so that the production stays about where it is now. I doubt that I would think we're within 250 million bushels either way of the corn crop, probably.
Thanks so much. Okay, if I post everything up to the website?
Sure.
Hey, thank you.
You bet. Bye.
Bye-bye.